Ghosts, cryptids, murder, conspiracies, beer, what, the, ale.
Hello, friends.
Hello, hello.
Welcome back to What the Ale. I'm Alana Ray.
And I'm Mama Jane.
And before we get into it, Mama, do you have any What the Ale moments? And are you drinking anything special this week?
I am having a lovely Tempranillo. No beer today, but a little bit of wine.
Nice.
Yeah, and my What the Ale moment is probably just like, I am like exhausted today and I don't know what's wrong with me and I have a bit of a headache. And so I'm really looking forward to like lounging and having some downtime this evening because for whatever reason, today just feels like a day.
Yeah, no, I feel it. I think it's like raining here and I'm like, and I worked from home and I just feel very sleepy and like needing rest and all the things, you know.
Yeah, the weather here is lovely, but yeah, maybe that's what it is. Maybe because I haven't gotten to be outside very much today, maybe I'm a little crabby.
That could be it, totally. I mean, yeah, I'm definitely I mean, I had to go out with the dog a couple of times, but you know, it has been very it's been very just like whatever. I was joking with my roommate earlier because I was like, I feel like that sad is hitting, that like seasonal depression. It's coming in. So she was like, do we like go in on a sun lamp together?
You probably do. Yeah, that makes sense.
But they're so expensive and they're so ugly. We're like, it's gonna like mess the decor.
You just need to make sure you still get some sunlight, even if it's cold out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, so I get having a day and needing rest.
I'm leaving to go out of town tomorrow, so I'm looking forward to that. I still have not packed, but you know, I will work on that tonight. So
it makes you feel better. I literally am like leaving in a week for Christmas and I don't have any gifts and I don't have anything back. So I get it.
That's okay.
No,
No worries.
I have like some things are like shipping. Some things I'm like debating on if they're going to get here in time and should I ship them to your house. Like I have like things in the works. I just.
Okay.
Yeah.
It'll be okay.
Yeah. Nope, just figuring it out. Classic me.
Yeah. You drinking anything?
Yeah, I am actually having more boxed wine today. It's called Revolution.
Oh, nice.
There's a red blend. It's very yummy. So if y'all like Bota Box, I highly recommend. They also have like wine juice boxes if you know can't do a full Bota. But I don't want it to go bad before I leave, so I'm trying to drink the wine before go. But yeah, let me think. What the old moments. You know, y'all, I've been very much just like okay, this is like massive nerd thing, and like you're not gonna get it, but it's okay. I've been playing a lot of this video game called Baldur's Gate 3. And in the game, I mean, outside of like trying to save the world from like evil, a big part of the game is you can romance characters. And I've played this game twice all the way through, and I've never gotten to romance a specific character named Hulsen. And I finally romanced him last night. And I was so happy because this has been, I've been wanting to romance him for like 6 or 7 months. The
What
nerd.
does romancing mean?
That means that you flirt with them and then eventually they want to sleep with you when they approach you at the campfire, like, hello.
Okay.
And then you go have sex in the woods and then it's
That's interesting.
Anyway, that's what you do when you're single and stuck inside. But anyway, I got to romance the character I've been trying to romance for a while, so I'm excited. Again, what the L moment. He offered, because he's a druid, he offered if I wanted to have sex with him as a bear, and I said, no, thank you, sir. But anyway.
I have no idea what any of that means, but I'm sure other people do.
D&D, man, it's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway, just me being a weirdo. But I guess more what the ill things. What's your topic this week, Mama?
Well, I decided that I had been covering a lot of murder lately, so I wanted to do something a little different. And I know I did a ton of ghosty things in October, so I decided to do something totally different. And I am going to cover a fucked up psychological experiment that took place over a 6-day period in August of 1971. Do
Are
you
you
know what
talking
I'm talking
about the
about?
prison study?
Huh?
You're talking about the prison study?
Yep.
Oof, goodness. Don't like that at
So,
all.
yeah, the experiment was led by Stanford professor Philip Zimbardo, with the goal, his stated goal was seeing how situational variables will influence behavior in a simulated prison environment. So, of course, this is the Stanford prison experiment.
Yeah. Whew.
Yeah, I didn't realize that the study was funded by the US Office of Naval Research because they wanted to understand antisocial behavior. So I didn't know that, but also, you know, it's interesting that they wanted to study antisocial behavior, but his stated reason for the study was different. And then the United States Navy and the Marine Corps also wanted to investigate conflict between military guards and prisoners. So they, you know, so basically it was all funded by the military, which I didn't know that. So that's interesting. Yeah.
I wonder like why the military was so interested. Like, I
I
mean,
mean, maybe they were just having a lot of issues, you know, between the military police and the or the prison military guards and the prisoners. Maybe they had been having issues. I'm not sure.
yeah, I mean, it makes sense in a prisoner of war capacity because technically you're enemies, right? So if you were
Yeah.
like as fucked up as it is, like if you are enemies, you know, you wouldn't have maybe as much empathy, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, I
No,
don't know.
that I'm sure is true. Yeah, you probably are. Well, and I was in the military, and I can tell you the whole like shoot to kill drive on. You know, it's like it's very, and I mean that's something, you know, you say in cadence, you know, so they definitely try to desensitize you to harming others. And yeah, so that could totally be a thing if it's a prisoner of war situation. Yeah, so the official website for the Stanford prison experiment, it describes the goals as just wanting to see the psychological impact when people are put into different roles, and seeing if like situational factors will influence people's behavior.
I mean,
But you know, I was gonna say, but interestingly, in 1996, so this was 1971, but in 1996, Zimbardi went into more detail stating, quote, "I have been conducting research for some years on de-individuation, vandalism, and dehumanization that illustrated the ease in which ordinary people could be led to engage in antisocial acts by putting them in situations where they felt anonymous or they could perceive others in ways that made them less human as enemies or objects." So, you know, the 20 years later, that was his bigger description, or 25 years later, that was his bigger description of what he was doing.
I mean, I'm not gonna lie, there's a reason why we have so many checks and balances when it comes to research now, and part of it is this
Yeah.
study.
Yeah. I was going to say the study really, it was a big reason why there are so many different ethical rules now.
like the fact that you have to like send an amendment and like wait 2 weeks just to add someone to the study, or like certain doctors cannot prescribe a certain drug or whatever. Like there are so many checks and balances now,
Yeah.
which is great. I mean, well needed, but
Yeah.
yeah, I mean, what he got away with this study, I mean, I cannot imagine.
Yeah. When I was in college, I mean, I definitely remember, you know, there would be like, oh, we'll give you $20 if you fill out this survey for this psychological study, or, you know, if you participate, you know, we'll pay you for your time or whatever. So I know that's a thing. In this situation, participants were recruited through an advertisement in the newspaper. And it cracked me up because I looked at the picture of it, and it's like, you know, it's like that ad, and then right underneath it's like, make good money and meet friends, be an Avon representative. And it kind of just cracked me up that that was the time where it was like, I don't know, it's just interesting.
I mean, that's definitely how we recruit for some of our studies. Like, we'll reach out to the colleges and just put them on their little job pages, and we'll be like, we're recruiting for a birth control study. And we get a lot of, like, most of our participants are students. So it is
Well, and these were all students, you know, because it was at Stanford University. So the ad was offering $15 a day, which in 2024, that would be $115 a day, which if you're a starving college student, that's pretty damn good.
I'm into it.
And the ad said it was for male students who wanted to participate in a psychological study of prison life, but no other details were given in the ad other than where to come if you were interested. Applicants were given assessments and about psychological stability, and if selected, they were then assigned randomly to being either prisoners or prison guards. Now, the interesting thing though is part of their recruitment, they asked people like, "What would you want to be, a prisoner or prison guard?" And every single one of them said a prisoner. And when they asked why, the basic response was, like, well, nobody likes the guards, so nobody wanted to be a guard, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, well, and honestly, like, my initial reaction was like, I kind of would rather be a guard just because I wouldn't want to be treated bad. Like, you get like people yelling at you, but I feel like you would get treated worse as a prisoner than as a guard. Like, that's where my brain goes.
Yeah,
But
but see, your thing is like I'm assuming that the guards are going to treat me badly, so I would rather be the guard.
yeah.
But these guys were all like, "Well, I don't want to be the asshole." So it was interesting though, right? So they none of them really wanted power. I do some of the I didn't write this down, but some of the participants did say that they thought as prisoners it would just be easier because they could just like lay around and smoke cigarettes all day,
Yeah.
whereas the guards would have like a role to do. So some of them chose it because they just thought it'd be easier.
I was gonna say that makes
But
sense, especially if you like have to read like the Iliad by Thursday. You know, you're just sitting there.
And then but basically they just kind of randomly assigned them to the role. There were 75 male students that applied and 24 were selected. And they chose primarily middle class white students that didn't have any significant criminal history, psychological, or medical issues. And when I say mostly, white students, there was one Asian guy. So, it was not a very diverse study.
And I mean, I know this is the 70s, but like no Black or Hispanic folks at all. Just, I was gonna say, I wondered. I mean, not that this is like, again, a bad thing, but especially back then, I do feel like race would have played a factor.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I'm kind of glad it wasn't because I do feel like I think that people might have been treated worse or, slurs and things like that might have been used that would make it a lot more personal. So I'm glad that they didn't. I understand, and maybe just because they were choosing from a pool of Stanford kids and back then it probably was not a very diverse campus. So, but I do think it could have gone worse if there were racial issues happening at the same time. Because, if people felt like they were being treated badly because of their race, I think it could have escalated a lot faster with good reason, probably.
I mean, yeah.
And then I'm going to sprinkle some stuff in, throughout about like how people interpreted the study, but this came out in 2008. It was Thomas Carnahan and Sam McFarland said that they felt like the participants were chosen because they had traits associated with abusiveness, so aggression, right-wing authoritarianism, Machiavellianism, social dominance orientation, or narcissism would be high in those that would like volunteer for a prison experiment. I mean, this is an assumption they're making is that those kind of traits would be the kind of person that would want to do a prison experiment, and that they felt like people that had a lower empathy or lower altruistic values would probably, want to volunteer, whereas somebody who had more empathy probably wouldn't want to volunteer for this study. So they were saying just by the fact that they said it was a prison experiment in the ad, it probably attracted a certain kind of person.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that making sense.
So the researchers did have an orientation session for the guards the day before the experiment. And the guards were instructed not to harm the prisoners physically or withhold food or drink, but that they had to maintain law and order and, making sure that the prisoners did not escape or become too disruptive was their main priority, and like protecting the prison. And the researchers provided the guards with wooden batons to establish their status, although they were not supposed to, hurt people with the batons. They also obviously dressed them in like guard kind of uniforms so that they, would not feel quite so much like individuals. They would be a part of a group. And then they gave them mirrored sunglasses to prevent eye contact and create anonymity. So all of that was very intentional.
I mean, they again wanted to dehumanize them or whatever, right? Like that.
So if they saw themselves as not, empathetic, caring people, but they were like just guards on duty serving a role, and they were not just human people that had feelings, like, so that's what they did with the guards. And the experiment, I should say, it was performed in a 35-foot section of the basement of Jordan Hall in Stanford Psychology Building. And so they just kind of like put up some fake walls, and they had an entrance, at one end, and each cell was like 7 by 10, so pretty small. They were unlit, so the light was coming from the hallway, and each room would house three prisoners.
Oh my God.
And the rooms only had a mattress, a sheet, and a pillow and a cot, but they didn't really have anything else in their rooms.
So why what okay. So like they didn't have like each prisoner didn't have a bed, like there was
No,
only
there
one.
is a cot. Yeah, there was a cot with a mattress, sheet, and pillow.
So like three with three
Three
cots.
per room. Yeah.
That's really tiny.
Yeah. And then there was no windows. So the prisoners did have difficulty keeping track of time. They didn't know if it was day or night, other by ju the, judging by the meal times. And they lost track of the days too, because they were mostly confined in their cells, and they had like a yard set up, which like the yard was basically like the hallway where they could come out for a bit and they would eat there. But they were basically in their cells, and because there was no windows and the light was like dim in the cells, and guards would wake them up during the night. So they really didn't know, was it day or night? What day of the week was it? They really got disoriented.
I don't. Okay.
And then I want to say too, but in contrast, the guards were allowed to stay in a different environment separate from the prisoners. So there was some guards that were like, like kind of substitute guards in case anything happened that would be in like a different area. But the guards worked in 8-hour shifts, and there was three different teams, so they would only work there 8 hours a day, and then they can leave, So the guards were not disoriented because they were actually leaving and going home and sleeping and doing all the things.
Okay, and the guards go to their normal homes and their normal lives. Like it wasn't like, okay.
So they weren't kept there.
Gotcha.
And then the guards, were instructed to refer to the prisoners by number rather than name. And Zimbardo said that this was to diminish the prisoners' individuality.
Okay.
And then that would lead them to feel like they had no individuality, which meant they had no control, and really had no control on what was happening to them. And his full, his hypothesis was that that would cause them to stop responding and give up, so they would become more passive.
I don't
And
love
then,
that.
and then at the guard orientation, that again, they were told to exert power over the prisoners, but not, and physically harm them. I mean, they keep saying that over and over again. They were told not to physically harm them. And then the prisoners, they were, I mean, they knew that they were going to be arrested, but they really tried to make it feel real. So the prisoners were arrested by real Palo Alto police, and they were taken to the actual jail and like run through all the booking procedures that you would normally, they were all told they were being arrested for like burglary or something, you know. And so they played the, I mean, the cops played that up as if it was a real thing, and it was real cops. And of course, they were also dressed for the occasion, so they were stripped down bare, they were deloused,
Oh my
and
gosh.
then their uniforms were like these knee-length smock kind of vibes. They were white, and they were not allowed to wear underwear underneath them.
Oh God.
And then they had to wear a stocking cap on their head, and yeah, I mean, just so like, you know, they didn't have any of their clothes, they didn't have any of their belongings. And then their smocks all had just their prison number on the back, so that they were not allowed to refer to each other by name. They just had to be their prison number.
I hate all of that.
Yeah. And at first, the participants, you know, particularly the prisoners, were being a little bit more lighthearted about it. Like they were kind of like joking around, or they thought it was funny, or they were trying to like test what the guards' boundaries were. So, you know, initially, like they kind of thought it was fun, but then it became clear that the guards seemed to take their roles of authority much more seriously. And, you know, obviously during the next 5 days, the psychological abuse of the prisoners by the guards became increasingly beautiful, or I'm sorry, beautiful, brutal. It
I was gonna say
was
beautiful. Interesting.
brutal. And before we get into those details, I want to let you know that the 2-week experiment ended on the sixth day after psychologist Christina Maslach, who happened to be Zimbardo's fiance at the time, she did marry him, and
Wow.
they're still married today because they're both alive.
Wow. Even for
But
that.
she, you know, she's a psychologist too, so she came to visit and like just check out the conditions and all that. And she was extremely concerned to see how the guards were behaving and the significant impact that it was having on the prisoners. So she confronted Zimbardo, and then he ended the experiment the next day. So, you know, he listened to the woman,
I mean,
which for her for speaking up.
yeah, I mean, good for her, especially with something like that where it could become so harmful, or it did become so harmful, you know, like it, yeah.
Yeah. So Oh, and oh yeah, they did do like mugshots and Miranda rights too. I forgot to mention that. So they did all of those normal things, and all of that you can, you know, it's all documented on video, so all of that you can see.
I was gonna say, I watched like a documentary about this or something in college. I
Yeah.
remember a lot
But
of
I, you know, as a prisoner, I do think it would be interesting to have to go through all that, like the strip search and the delousing and everything. That does seem like a lot.
it doesn't seem okay to me, but
Yeah.
were they given a consent form with everything that could happen to them?
No, but they, so, and this is where there's a question, because at some point Zimbardo does say that there was like, you know, a safe phrase that they could do. So, and the phrase, I don't write it down, but the phrase was something like, I would like to terminate the experiment or something like that. And you know, he said, well, nobody ever said the safe word or the safe phrase. But in the contract, there was nothing at all written about a safe phrase or a way to get out. And so, you know, the people really did believe that they had to stay there, and some of them did ask to be let out, and they wouldn't let them out. And Zimbardo said, well, we would have let them out if they had said the phrase, but they didn't. So, you know, but the phrase was not in the contract, so it just seems like that was a lie.
Yeah, that seems a little like McCamey Mannery, where there is a safe
Yeah.
word. He's not listening to the safe word.
Yeah. So, I mean, the guards did not beat them. If you watch the movie, there is definitely more physical punishment that way. But in reality, they did physical punishments through exercise and sleep deprivation. So they would like make them do push-ups or jumping jacks or things like that. And then they were like more and more aggressive with their language. So they would, you know, just say a lot of things to embarrass them, or, you know, would call them names, cuss at them, do all that kind of stuff. And they even forced inmates to do things to humiliate them, like pretending to sodomize each other.
God.
So yeah, it got pretty nasty anyways. And then, you know, they would wake up the prisoners, you know, by like clanging their batons on the like walls or the doors. And you know, and then I want to stress this is by like day two, the prisoners started fighting back. And
Yeah.
so they started refusing to eat, you know, come out of their cells to eat. And they ripped off their number tags off their smocks. They took off their stocking caps and started insulting the guards back. And
Wow.
in response to that, the guards decided to spray them with fire extinguishers and, you know, in order to like reassert control. And then,
Whoa.
yeah, and then backup guards were brought in and they removed all of the prisoners' clothes. They removed the mattresses and sent, and the people that were instigating, you know, the uprising or whatever you want to call it, they sent them to spend time in the special detention unit, which was basically like a closet.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, and then the guards would refer to them as dangerous prisoners and would like any of the prisoners that were like being more obedient, they would reward them by letting them be in the room that did have a mattress or you know, do little things to, you know, make them feel better, give them their clothes back, that kind of stuff. But then they would deny food to the rest of the people that were part of the uprising.
Right. And were some of these things like, were these things Zimbardo was telling them to do, like the putting them in the hole or whatever and doing stuff like that, or were they doing this on their own?
So they were not told to do those things, but Zimbardo and the guy that actually played the warden, you know, definitely were telling them you need to be tough, you need to be a guard, you need to assert dominance. So they weren't telling them what to do, but they, you know, it and that's why this psychological study, quote unquote, is not really valid because it's not like they were just behaving out of their own free will. They were being directed on how to behave. You know, so Zimbardo is saying he wants to see if just the situation of the environment would make people behave in a way that was like more aggressive is not true if you're telling them to do that, you know, because then they're just playing out the role.
Yeah, that's like not sound science. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, so and then they restricted access to the bathrooms and they forced them to relieve themselves in buckets in their cell. So it just got, you know, more and more aggressive. Now, there was a the you know, this is the first prisoner to leave the experiment was Douglas Corpy, so prisoner 8612. And he had been in there for 36 hours. When you know he yelled out, "Jesus Christ, I'm burning up inside. I can't spend another night. I can't take it anymore." And one of the research assistants ended up letting him out.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Now, there's conflicting stories about this. So in 1992, there was a documentary called The Quiet Rage, and in that documentary, he said that he that the experiment had deeply affected him, and but that his experience there did cause him to later become a prison psychologist.
Oh, wow.
But you know, so but acting like it was a traumatic event and that it led him to his career. But then in 2017, he did another interview where he said that it was a fake, you know, that he faked it because he thought that by being a prisoner, that that meant he could like have his books and study, and he was going to be taking the GRE. And so he was like, "I'll have 2 weeks where I'm locked up and I can just study." And then when he realized that they weren't going to let him study, he asked to leave and they wouldn't let him leave. So
Oh.
he says that he faked like a mental breakdown so that they would let him out, so that he could go study for the GRE.
I mean, that's like a much more tame version of the story, but
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it sounds like a lot of other people were really deeply impacted by this, so I wouldn't be shocked if he actually was like losing his mind, you know?
Yeah. And then Zimbardo, of course, responded to that saying, you know, no, he was let go because we needed to treat the breakdown as real and release him because it was a breakdown, and that he thinks that the 2017 interview was a lie. So I don't know whether it was or not, but those are the two stories about him.
Interesting. Okay.
So, you know, the inmates ended up starting by day four, started fighting with each other because they were noticing that, like, the ones that were kind of more defiant or rebellious, would cause consequences to the ones that were quieter. And so then they started like fighting against each other because the ones that were rebellious were like, why aren't you guys stepping up? You need to step up. And the ones that were like, hey, let's just go along to get along, they were mad at them for getting them in trouble. So then they started like kind of fighting with each other. Yeah. And they just wanted, they just wanted their mattresses and their clothes back. So, I can understand them being like, just shut up. And then there was a prisoner 819 who started showing symptoms of distress. And he was like crying in his cell and carrying on. And they ended up calling in like a chaplain or a priest to come in and talk with him.
Okay.
And but you know that but he didn't want to talk to the priest and instead asked for a medical doctor. And so Zimbardo did end up removing him from the experiment. But as he was leaving, all of the guards had the other prisoners keep repeating and screaming out, 819 did a bad thing. So, yeah, so kind of shaming him on his way out.
Right, which seems uncool to me.
Yeah. And then day five was visitation day. So friends and family could visit the inmates. And Zimbardo did make the visitors wait for a long period of time. And they could only see their loved ones, two visitors at a time, and only for 10 minutes while a guard was watching. And the parents started expressing concern that their sons didn't look well and, they didn't feel like they had enough to eat. And some of the parents even threatened to call lawyers to gain an early release for their children because Zimbardo was like, well, they agree to this, so we're not letting them go.
Oh, wow. I mean, that's telling, right? Like their parents were
Yeah.
feeling like their kids were unsafe. That's scary.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, obviously this is the day that the fiance came and saw them and was like, they don't look well, they don't look healthy, like they're clearly under distress and like, it's not great. And so, this experiment has been referenced and critiqued as an unethical psychological experiment because they do say it inflicted harm on the participants.
I mean,
And
yeah.
then, but a lot of people just argue that it wasn't a real experiment because the guards were coached. And then having the researchers, because you can't have a psychological experiment where the people that are observing and taking in the data are also a part of the experiment. So Zimbardo playing the role of the superintendent and the undergraduate research assistant, David Jaffe, playing the role of the warden automatically means this is not like a viable study. And
Yeah.
I think David Jaffe was the one who came up with the idea for this, and then Zimbardo ran with it.
But like Zimbardo should know what ethical research practice is. Like he's
Yeah.
professor here.
Yeah. And then, people argue that Zimbardo was an activist who is wanting prison reform. So he had predicted what the outcome would be. And then he seemed to try to influence the participants' behavior, in that way so that he could make his argument stronger for why we need prison reform.
I mean, I'm all for prison reform, but not this
Yeah.
way.
Yeah. So yeah, so people were saying for like some of those reasons, like, it's not a very valid experiment. And Zimbardo, I mean, he basically says that he wanted to prove that people were inherently capable of great cruelty if they're in a position of power and in certain circumstance or environment, and that other people are inherently capable of surrender or giving up their power depending on the situational factors. And the some of the arguments are that people are not inherently cruel but are capable of cruelty if they are recruited by an authority figure. And people even compared it to the Milgram experiment that happened 10 years before. Do you know that study?
That's the button one, right? Like they pushed the
Yeah,
button,
the shock.
got higher, but they
Yeah.
were acting, but they didn't know they were acting. That
Yeah.
one? Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah. So it's exactly that, the Milgram study. Yeah. So the participants were, told to give shocks for like wrong answers or whatever. And the people that were supposedly receiving the shocks were just actors. They were not actually being shocked. But you know, people did increase the intensity of the shock because they had a man in a lab coat telling them to do it, you know, and those are not people that would normally intentionally harm others, but they did because the authority figure told them to do it. And so, you know, this seems to be the same kind of thing. It's not that they were inherently cruel, but they were responding to the authority figures telling them to be tough, you know?
And that again is just like super fucked up and sad, you know?
You know, and then there's this is kind of similar, but there is a situationist theory that says that there are external circumstances that are the drivers of human behavior. So again, not inherently cruel, but will perform in the way if there's a structure in place that expects it from them. And so the idea of just following orders. And so situational theory is or situationist theory is something that is applied to the Nazi situation. You know, because it was like a structure in place where people were like, well, I'm just doing what I'm told to do. And they didn't even really take the time to go, should I be doing this or is it the right thing? It was just like, well, you know, I'm part of this group and that's what I'm told to do.
Oh, okay. I can see that, but again, super fucked up.
And then, you know, again, it just seems like he tried to spin the results in a way that would you know, say that like the prison system itself creates these dynamics and that it's not, you know, it's not something that could be influenced, you know. And so, like, maybe we should just tell our guards to treat people better. He was saying that, like, the situation itself is what causes the guards to be cruel and therefore it's not okay. You know, but obviously, a lot of people would argue that no, we just need to train our guards to be. You know, gentler and kinder, and you know, still have power, but like you don't have to be harmful to people.
Well, and he told them to be aggressive and terrible. So that.
Yeah, and that's what they said, that there was a demand bias in the way that the guards were oriented.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And then, I mean, there were multiple different people that were saying, you know, that all of these things that I just said. So, and then the other thing about, you know, when he decided to publish the study, you know, normally you publish a study in like peer-reviewed journals. So, like American psychologists would be the normal place that researchers would post these things. But instead, he submitted to the Naval Research Reviews, which he did say that that was part of the contract since they were paying for it. So that might be something that he did have to do. But he also submitted to the International Journal of Criminology and Penology and New York Times Magazine. So,
So
you
is
know,
this
he did all.
attention seeking
Yeah,
or is
it was very attention seeking, which definitely like follows on the theory that he was just trying to get a study that would support his argument for prison reform, which again, I'm all for it. But you have to be honest about why and how and all of the things.
Yeah,
So
well,
he got a lot of criticism about not first going to peer-reviewed journals because if he had done that, this would have been seen as not a real experiment, you know?
yeah, no, I mean, that's huge. Like, peer review is everything.
Now, I did want to say there was, you know, there was one particular guard that, he was kind of like the main like head guard or whatever. And, you know, it wasn't assigned to him. He just sort of took that role, but his name was, David Eshelman. But people referred to him in the study as, John Wayne. Like, but so, you know, the funny thing is, you know, and there are many interviews with him because he does feel bad. You know, he was the one that like had them simulate sodomy, and you know, he was definitely the one that was the most like in their face aggressive, and he was encouraging the other guards to be. But it's funny when they interview him about it, he really says that like he in high school did theater and he saw himself as like he was in this role of the guard. And he, you know, so he thought about like what is Zimbardo and the team wanting from me? And they're wanting me to be a stereotypical power hungry guard. And so he felt like he was just playing that role. And so he said he like identified with the warden in the movie Cool Hand Luke. And so he modeled his behavior as a guard after that character. So he had a Southern accent that he made up, and he did and said a lot of things that were very similar to what the warden in Cool Hand Luke movie did. And so, but he said it was just an act, like, this is what the role that they wanted me. And so I played out that role. So again, it wasn't that he was like just cruel by nature or something. He was like, they're paying me $15 a day to do what they want me to do. And again, I'm not saying it's okay what he did, but it's just interesting that like he saw this as like an act, just a theater thing that he was doing, and he was trying to be the best, John Wayne character or Cool Hand Luke character that he could.
I guess, but still, that there's some extremes.
So, but I thought that was interesting, and he does feel really bad. He says he has a lot of regrets about what he did, but he, in his mind, it was just kind of like a game that they were playing, and he didn't mean to actually cause harm, but he says they were telling him to be tougher. Even though they say they didn't have that influence, but clearly they did. And then there were some prison guards that followed along with him. And like, he was obviously the leader, but they kind of like went along with what he said. And there were other guards that did not, but the other guards, they would, show kindnesses to the prisoners when, the meaner guards were not around. But none of them stood up against the mean guards. None of them said, hey, this isn't okay, we can't do this, so they would just stand there silently when the bad guards were in charge. But then they would do kindnesses for the prisoners, privately. So, again, if he was trying to just prove that all of them would, inherently go to cruelty if they were in a position of power in that environment, the ones that didn't prove that wrong anyways. And even though they were also being coached to be tough, they chose not to. But they didn't take a stand. So
I mean, but that also makes like power dynamics are weird, man. Like it makes sense, but it sucks, right? Like
But there is the movie. I mean, obviously the movie dramatizes it. I watched it a few months ago for the first time. And it's very good, but they definitely show more like physical abuse where they're like actually hitting them or pushing them, and that kind of stuff didn't actually happen.
Okay. I mean, that's good to know at
Oh
least.
yeah, I forgot to mention though, the prisoners did at one time, they did take their cots and like stack them against the door so the guards could not get into their rooms. So they did do that at some point during the like uprising. But yeah, there was not the kind of violence that there was in the movie.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, it's just I don't like this experiment. It's so unethical, but I don't know.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I don't think it's a real experiment because there wasn't there has to be like a like independent variable. And there really wasn't. So, it's like you're supposed to manipulate one to see how it impacts the other. But in this situation, it was like they were just being told what to do. And so there was, it wasn't what was natural to them.
Yeah, like if they were just like put in jail and like given like enough food and water to last for 2 weeks, I wonder what would have happened versus like them being coached, right? I don't know. I don't know.
Anyways, it's a shitty experiment, but this is the experiment, and the Milgram experiment obviously influenced people to really think about the ethics and all of that. But this one definitely had people go, no, we need more checks and balances, and we have to have, some kind of standard about what we can do or what the consent process is, or how we're researching, and that we shouldn't be involved in the research. We should be observing it and reporting on it. But Zimbardo stands behind this experiment 100% and, says it is a very legit experiment, even though it clearly isn't. So,
He can have his feelings all he wants. I just
It
As
was very
someone
biased and very, manipulated, so.
As someone who has had to study this experiment several times, just talk about why it's not a real study. I could tell you it's not.
I know it's a little different than what we usually do, but it's definitely a what the ale situation. So I thought it was fitting and just kind of taking a break from murdery things for a week.
Yeah, no, super fucked up. I mean, I don't like it, man. So yeah. Woo. Gross. I hate it. Anyway, friends, thanks for listening and bearing with us. If you like our show, you can like, subscribe, rate 5 stars wherever you get your podcasts. We have a Patreon where we post bonus content, and we also have an Instagram, which is What the Ale Pod, where you can keep up with us and what we're releasing. And lastly, we do have an email account, which is whatthealepod@gmail.com. And that is where you can, reach out to us, let us know of any topic ideas or send us your personal stories, anything like that. But outside of that, I just want to say I appreciate you, Mama.
I appreciate you too, babe.
And we appreciate you, friends. Bye.
Bye.